Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Cliff. Thanks for joining me. This is a special edition of Earth Ancients. This program is designed to provide you with some of the techniques and practices that are coming back from the ancient past. These are consciousness traditions. Some of them are native traditions. And today we are introducing telepathy, how to incorporate it into your daily life. And this is part of a series, a special edition series that I'm going to start posting each month. We'll have 1 to 2 programs with world-class authors. The program is to give you access to these wisdom traditions that have been around, but only accessible to a few people. You had to pay thousands of dollars for weeks and weeks of training, or you had to go to a class and sit through programs by individuals. This is something entirely new. This is going to be a program series where you can listen to the author. You can practice. We'll have a introduction to the tradition, to the actual, whatever the practice is, meditation, telepathy, brain enhancement. Then we'll have an experiential portion where we'll either have a meditation, we'll have some form of practice, so you get a sense of what we're doing, what we're talking about. So I hope you enjoy this. Today's program is with Colleen Morrow, and she is the author of Spiritual Telepathy, and I think you're really going to enjoy this. So here we go. This is a special edition of Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. Hey, as many of you know, I have been meditating for over 20 years. I picked it up when I was younger, and I wanted to discover what all the talk was about meditation. And in the time since then, I can say that I have benefited in a number of ways. I have more clarity each day. Physically, I feel great after I've meditated. And it really helps me in my really busy and active lifestyle, giving me advantages of clear thinking, clear perception, and what I would think is better cognition. Now, meditation comes from very old civilizations. We don't really know where it originated. And it's similar to yoga. Yoga is thought to be around 5,000 years old. And I do yoga too. And it's interesting because yoga, like meditation, is a very old art. And there's something about it that when you practice yoga, even the most basic seated yoga, which if you can't stand or you're having trouble, just basic yoga stretches the muscles, stretches the bones, moves the bones, I should say. And when we do these movements, something is triggered. I go into an altered state. And how the ancients knew how these systems worked is really, we just don't know. But what we do know is that these ancient techniques like meditation and yoga have huge, huge benefits. If you can continue to meditate, if you learn yoga, you're feeling better, you actually live longer, you look younger, your health is better physically, mentally, and you just interact with others. And so this series, this special edition series of programs, is designed to reintroduce ancient wisdom through the writings and teachings of the various authors that we'll have on the program. This program is not for everybody. Not everybody is ready for this. Some people just are not into it. They're too busy. They're not interested in meditation or yoga or programs like spiritual telepathy, which is the topic of our program today. Hey, so if you're not into this, you know, maybe listen along and see what you think. Part of each of these programs will be an interview with the author, understanding where they began to form a thought for a book. And then once we get through that portion, we are going to do an experiential process where we'll either do a meditation where we connect and understand the different levels of mind, and then we'll conclude the meditation with a few final thoughts, and that'll be it. These are not going to be the typically longer 1.5 hour programs that we have on our Saturday program. These are a little shorter and more in depth. So I think you're going to like these, and I'd really like to know what you think. If you could write me at cliff@earthancients.com and let me know what you're thinking, I would really appreciate it. Earth Ancients is brought to you by Gaia, and Gaia is introducing and giving access to over 8,600 titles of ancient spiritual wisdom programs. And these are programs on learning how to meditate. You can meditate from scratch. Yoga, ancient wisdom traditions, how they work, how we integrate them into our lives. And over, you know, multiple thousands of titles on everything from understanding the pyramids, understanding religion of the ancients, and a lot of information that's coming through to us today. To join this program with Gaia, go to Gaia.com, and that's GAIA.com/Earth Ancients. Gaia is a regular sponsor of Earth Ancients, and I would appreciate it if you would consider them. Hey, and their program is 99 cents. To start, you kick off with a 99-cent program, and then after that, it's about $9.95 each month. Over 8,600 titles of everything you can imagine: occult sciences, ancient wisdom, ancient advanced civilizations, just so much more. Oh, hey, if you're into ancient aliens, they got a ton of stuff on aliens. So I hope you'll consider it. Gaia.com/Earth Ancients. Today's topic, spiritual telepathy, is an ancient wisdom tradition brought back to us today by author Colleen Morrow. I hope you enjoy the program. So this is the first in a series of programs that I'm introducing on Earth Ancients. This is a special edition. And what will be unique about this and many more to come programs is we will be speaking on a practical side, you know, why these are important programs, these are important practices. And each show will have an experiential side of the program that can be either a guided meditation or perhaps a case study of how someone interacted with a wisdom tradition. But these are all made and designed for you, the listener, to interact, to take this information, maybe play it later when things are a little quieter and you can really listen to the experiential side of these presentations. But it's all about accessing these wisdom traditions. And my guest today is Colleen Morrow, who has written a book called Spiritual Telepathy, Ancient Techniques to Access the Wisdom of Your Soul. Now, she has quite an interesting background. She was the founder and editor-in-chief of Intuition Magazine. Intuition explored the higher potential of the mind and the many and varied ways of intuitive knowing. The magazine provided how-to information, cutting-edge research, and interview with leaders in the field. And so I really liked portions of the book that I read. And so I reached out, and here's Colleen. Colleen, how are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. I really was quite intrigued because you tap into a lot of these ancient traditions. You mentioned the Greeks and the Hindus used a lot of these techniques, telepathy, in their, I guess, daily practices. But let's start off. The big question we want to ask you, as somebody who obviously does use telepathy, is why is telepathy an important practice for us today?
Well, this is a specialized type of telepathy, spiritual telepathy. There's actually three types. There's instinctive or feeling level telepathy, there's mental telepathy, and then there's soul-to-soul or spiritual telepathy. And it's a very interesting teaching about these three types of telepathy, and they show how we progress, how our perceptual abilities progress from instinct to intellect to pure intuitive knowing. So this is the highest and final stage of telepathy, and this is what we're moving into right now. It's a new thing for most of us.
Interesting. Important for our listeners is you did research, obviously, on how the Greeks used it and the Hindus and other cultures, prehistoric cultures, historic cultures. Where was it that you discovered their use of telepathy? Was it in writings? Was it in examples they gave? Perhaps somebody gave a case study of a patient or somebody that was learning this. Where do the ancients fall into the telepathy, and how did they use it?
Well, it's a little deeper than that. These are the esoteric or mystery teachings, and they were taught in the ancient mystery schools in Greek, in Babylon, and India. And this teaching was first put into book form by the Hindu sage Patanjali in his book, The Yoga Sutras, many, many centuries ago. So this has been handed down from century to century. And what I wanted to do was to make these teachings available to a wider audience. Most of the books are very hard to read. The language is very arcane. And I wanted to make the language first more accessible and to show that it's the teaching that lies at the very heart of all of our spiritual traditions that's also taught in indigenous cultures. And some of the teachings are even now validated by science. So I wanted to reach a bigger audience than those that are already reading and already believing in these teachings, because I think it's really important, especially important now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get into telepathy. I'm really curious. Now, when you're talking about spiritual telepathy, are you suggesting that we tap into higher guidance? Are you tapping into dimensional beings? Are we actually working with levels of consciousness? I mean, what is it? How do we distinguish telepathy and getting information?
Well, let me go into more detail about the different types. That will be helpful to people listening, I think. Again, the first is instinctual or feeling-based telepathy. And this type of telepathy utilizes the third chakra or the third energy center. We share this type of telepathy with the animal kingdom, and it's still used as a means of communication in indigenous cultures. And I did a lot of really interesting research on that, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. The second is mental or mind-to-mind telepathy, and that utilizes the throat chakra. And this type of telepathy is still pretty rare. Most of what's being studied now and called mental telepathy is actually really instinctive telepathy. And the pure examples are people like Alice Bailey and Helena Blavatsky, who were able to remotely attune their minds to another person and use the information they received to write their books. Alice Bailey says that this will be our preferred mode of communication in about 300 years. And the third and highest type of telepathy utilizes the head centers. And this is spiritual or soul-to-soul telepathy. And this type of telepathy allows us to connect on a soul level with physical and non-physical entities. And it's said to have been the mechanism by which our religious scriptures were transmitted.
Fascinating. Would you say that the best-known term for the higher levels, and I'm going to use the term that we use in computing today, which is clouds. It's a cloud system. I've heard the word Akashic records, and Bailey uses that. Blavatsky uses that, I believe. is that something that's attainable, and that is that an area that you're suggesting that we're tapping into, or is there other levels?
Well, there are higher levels. That's one of the levels. They talk about how the mental plane is broken down into the lower mental and the higher mental. And when we're accessing spiritual telepathy, we're actually working at that higher level. And we're able to access even the universal or divine mind, where information on all subjects can be found. That was one of the more interesting accidents, the things that I wasn't expecting that I just kind of stumbled over. And I can talk about that a little bit more later because it's kind of involved. But what I discovered is that that experience is the experience we call genius, that many of the people that we call geniuses or visionaries talk about this in exactly the way it's explained in the wisdom teachings, that they had this experience of first contacting the soul and then beyond the soul to the universal or divine mind, where information then would just flood their brains, and they would use it in their scientific discoveries or their beautiful works of art. Music composers use this for their music, artists for their art. It's really fascinating to study.
Would you say that we all, every human being, has the ability to tap into these higher levels to have telepathic communications? Or is it just a certain state of mind and somebody who has evolved in a certain degree?
Well, that's a really good question, and I had that same question. And I've always been really touched and even envious when I would hear about or read about somebody who has that ability to connect with the higher realms. I love the story of Joan of Arc. She was able to talk to saints and angels. Eileen Caddy got direct guidance that led to the founding of the Findhorn community. And there are other people that had this direct connection. And I always thought, why does that only happen to some people? Are they more evolved than we are? So, you know, do you have to move into a monastery and devote your whole life to this? And what I discovered in studying this was that it's really our evolutionary destiny, that we're standing at the threshold of an evolutionary shift, and it's a very profound one, as profound as our emergence from human to animal. And the next evolutionary breakthrough is not a change in our forms, but the emergence of a new kind of human, one that has access to the superhuman worlds. It's just part of a continuum where we develop first our physical senses and then our subtle senses. And when we do that, we become universal in our outlook, that we have both the physical and the spiritual realms that we live in. And that was pretty exciting to me to realize that there's kind of a planned sequence, a step-by-step sequence that really has been laid out for us from the beginning of time, that takes us from the primitive state of the caveman all the way to the superhuman state, which is symbolized by the Christ and Buddha and other great spiritual leaders. That's our destiny. That's where we're going. And we're making a really significant shift right now.
Let's talk about that. That's where I want to talk about, the shift. Now, do you perceive a level of consciousness in the current, our current state of evolution, where we are either prepared to receive more telepathy, more information, more guidance, or is it, if you follow the yugas, the Hindu yugas, it's just a period of our time when, for lack of a better word, the frequencies are finer, we're able to pick up on them a lot easier, and we don't need to be somebody who's wide open to it, like we would say a psychic or somebody who's channeling or whatever. Why is now the time to really get into this?
Well, I think it's just part of an evolutionary process, and this is the next step, and this is where we're moving. And I think that we're kind of being forced to kind of move, because when we're our lives are easy, we don't really have any kind of impetus to change. And Barbara Marx Hubbard and Eckhart Tolle have talked about this a lot, and I think they have a really interesting viewpoint that change happens due to a crisis. And Tolle talks about this and says that as a species, we have the choice now to evolve or die. And they both say that evolution happens when we're propelled or forced to make this great leap forward. And Tolle uses the example of an amphibian who's forced to develop the ability to live on land after its habitat dries up. And I think that with all the challenges we face, we're being forced to move forward, and we're being forced to sort of move into that state where we believe and understand and feel that we're all interconnected, that universal state that happens when we make contact with the soul and have access to these higher worlds. that we have problems in our world that can only be solved by that state of consciousness.
Wow. What does a person look like who has regular perceptions from outer realms? I mean, is this person, as you say, a genius, or is this person just able to flow through their day better because they're getting gut feelings about what they're doing, who they're interacting with, the decisions they're making? What does a fully connected being look like?
Well, it's way beyond the gut feeling level. That's the instinctive level. And I'll tell you a little story about how the magazine got started, because it's a good illustration of this type of experience. And it can happen spontaneously, but what was really interesting to me to realize that we can actually train ourselves to access the higher worlds. We can train ourselves to have these experiences. It doesn't have to be a spontaneous thing that we sit around waiting for. I had always been very interested in the spiritual worlds and intuitive studies. And in the late 80s, I was living in San Francisco. And I had worked for several alternative magazines. And I finally found myself without a job and was trying to figure out what to do. And I had already worked for all the magazines that I liked, so I wasn't sure what I was going to do next. And I was just driving myself crazy, worrying about it and worrying about money, talking to editors and researching new magazines. And one morning I woke up and decided that I really needed to take a mental health day, that I was driving myself nuts, and I was going to spend one 24-hour period of not thinking about this and just enjoying the day. And it was October. I remember that. That's my favorite month in San Francisco. So I went out and bought some bulbs, and I decided to putter around in my garden. And as I was puttering around, I had this type of intuitive experience that I had never had before. A thought just flashed through my mind, and I knew instantly that it wasn't my thought. I had always accessed intuition through feelings or some kind of body-based sensation, like a queasy stomach. But these were words that felt like they had been just dropped right into my brain. And so I actually stopped. I was raking or something. I just stopped and stood still, trying to figure out why that thought was there. Why would I think that? And I tried to trace it back, and it was clear that I didn't generate it, that it came from somewhere else. And the thought was the Center for Applied Intuition. And it didn't make any logical sense in the context of what I was looking for. I was looking for a magazine job. And I knew about Bill Kautz and the center that he had. It was a small two-room place. And he did intuition trainings, and he sent intuitives out to do business consulting. Didn't make any sense that I would contact him if I was looking for a magazine job. So I thought about it for a few days and then thought, well, what the heck? And I called him up, and I asked him to send me information about the center's activities. And a few days later, I got a big package, and when I dumped it out, there were a lot of brochures and a very simple typewritten journal called Applied Psi. And this was the quarterly publication that Bill sent to the center's 200 members. And the journal was about the subjects of intuition and creativity. And as I flipped through the pages, I thought, wow, this is great. This is interesting. It could be a real magazine. It would have to have a new name, and it would have to be spiffed up. But I think a lot of people would be interested in this, way beyond this tiny little membership. So I called him up, made an appointment. When I arrived at the center and pitched him on my idea, he just lit up and said that he had always dreamed of turning it into a real magazine, but the right person had never come along. So I went home, banged out a proposal, brought it back the next day, and suddenly I was launching a new magazine. And we called it Intuition, a Magazine for the Higher Potential of the Mind. And I got 2 issues out for Bill before he decided to close the office. He signed the rights over to me, and I later got a grant, which allowed me to get an office and hire a staff. So it was that experience of just having the information come into the brain. It has to hit our brains in order for it to be part of our conscious awareness, because otherwise it's just sort of a hazy, vague something. It has to really register in the brain. So that's the kind of experience I'm talking about, and it's possible to train ourselves. It's a mind training that will allow us to access information at will, so we don't have to wait till we're puttering around in our garden and, you know, maybe it'll happen and maybe it won't. We can actually do this. And it's the kind of training that was given in the mystery schools. It's the esoteric mystery teachings. And it's possible now to everyone. Used to be only a very select few was allowed to have this training. Now it's available to everybody who's willing to do the meditations daily. It takes a discipline. It really is a meditation, a daily meditation, and a discipline that allows us to create this connection with the higher world.
Let's talk a little bit about preparation. Let's see. Why is the refinement of our physical, emotional, and mental bodies the first step in mind training? What is that? How do you undertake that?
Well, that's a really good question, and that is really the first step. What we need to do is we need to create a direct line of communication between the soul, the mind, and the brain. And to do this, we need to purify and raise the vibration of the physical body, and especially to quiet our minds and emotions. If we're ill, tired, or especially if we have mental or emotional static, it'll literally repel those subtle currents of thought, and our brains will not register the higher ideas and wisdom. And refinement practices, I discovered, are part of all the spiritual traditions, and the methods vary, but the requirements and goals are exactly the same. Purity of body, control of the emotions, and stability of mind. And in the book, I included the refinement practices that have helped me the most, a practice called harmlessness, the nightly review, and meditations on loving kindness, forgiveness, and compassion. Those are really key. I talked to a lot of people and asked them what they did to refine their emotional body, because that's really the body that gives us the most trouble. And they all said that forgiveness was really essential. You have to be really calm inside. You have to be able to forgive the people and be more tolerant. And that's not that easy. It wasn't easy for me. I actually had so much of a problem with it. I had some resentments that I really couldn't get rid of. And I worked with a spiritual healer who told me to do these meditations every day, three of them, forgiveness, loving kindness, and compassion. And as I did them day by day by day, I really quieted down. I was really able to forgive people and be more tolerant. And that's when it really started to happen for me, that we can't have all the static going on, or we really can't be calm enough to perceive these higher currents.
So you can't really be carrying a lot of anger or frustration or mental fatigue to allow these subtleties to come through. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's right. And anybody that's tried to meditate when they're upset, they know what it feels like. You can't concentrate because all you can think about is, you know, what you're upset about. And a lot of times it takes therapy. I mean, I've had quite a bit myself. You have to do what you have to do just to make sure that you can calm down inside.
Mm-hmm.
But these practices really are very powerful. Very simple practice of loving kindness, compassion. Every day it really starts to shift how you perceive the world and how you interact with other people.
Did you find any wisdom traditions that actually spoke about what you're suggesting, where you have to have basically the clean mind, body, and spirit, or at least not heavily weighted down by problematic conditions?
Sure, it's everywhere. It's in the Noble Eightfold Path of the Buddha. It's in the development of Christian virtues. And it's also part of the teachings on character refinement in Judaism and Islam. It's really the basis and the starting point. And you find it in all scriptures, all religious teachings.
Wow.
And again, it's in different form, but they're basically saying the same thing.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. I was reading a section of your book on the wisdom traditions, and you refer to Pythagoras, the Greek philosopher, who uses the number 7. It's a very highly spiritual number. Can you talk a little bit about the number 7 and why it's very important?
Well, that's a good question too, because anybody that reads this material is going to wonder why everything's 7. There's 7 chakras, there's 7 sacraments, and so on. Everything is 7. And I found an answer in the Secret Doctrine. She said that that's just the number in our current solar system. That when you take the triangle, which is 3, and you intersect with the square, which is 4, which represents the 4 races of man, you get spirit into matter, and that creates life. And it forms a 6-pointed star, which creates which illustrates the alignment of heaven and earth. That really is our goal in this particular evolutionary process. So it's kind of esoteric. But it does make sense when you start to think about how everything is 7.
So, Colleen, I'd like you to read from the introduction, or actually it's the chapter 1 of your book, a section that I thought was quite unique. It's page 14.
the last two paragraphs. We are living in a time of accelerated opening, and it's now possible to take the next step up the evolutionary ladder. As I've mentioned, the higher self or soul, our spark of the divine, is our portal to the superhuman worlds. The soul is neither spirit nor matter, but our link between the two. The soul stands midway between the personality and the world of pure spirit. When we build our bridge to the soul, we enlarge our horizons and expand our consciousness beyond the boundaries of the physical world. We become aware of a new kingdom in nature, the fifth kingdom, the kingdom of the soul. When we gain access to this higher realm, a new world opens before us. Our history books are full of stories about our most famous explorers, from Christopher Columbus's journey to the Americas to Neil Armstrong's walk on the moon. The next frontier is our exploration of the subtle world, a world once accessible only to mystics, seers, and spiritual leaders.
Now, that was very telling, and I want you to explain to our listeners what the level of unseen soul is. That's a very interesting statement you make, and I'm just curious.
Well, we consider the soul to be that divine part of ourselves that exists from lifetime to lifetime, and it puts down little pieces of itself into the physical world for our human experience. And it's with us lifetime after lifetime, so it knows our higher purpose, it knows our evolutionary state, and really what we're learning in this particular incarnation. So when we start to consciously make that connection, we become what's called a soul-infused human being. So we have this access, direct access to the soul, and eventually we live as a soul in a human body rather than a human being that's making contact with the soul. It kind of reverses. And we become a soul in the world, and one great example of that is Jesus. He modeled that for us perfectly, where we use our human body to give service to other people.
That's fascinating. That's a great example. What are some of the benefits of a daily contact with the higher worlds? And, you know, within that is the soul level, I guess. What is the benefit of that?
Well, it's changed my life a lot. When we're doing the meditation that I'm going to introduce, at the end of our daily meditation, we ask that soul light pour down over our lower bodies, that it calm our minds and emotions, invigorates our physical bodies. And it's that daily contact with the light of the soul that raises our vibration, and I think it speeds up our evolution. It's a very slow and subtle energetic process. What I've noticed is that I've started to look at things from a higher perspective, and I'm definitely more tolerant and less judgmental. And I do have a lot more peace and joy in my life, and I feel like I have a more consistent source of guidance and a much greater understanding of what contribution I could make to the world. So it's really changed my life. It's a very subtle energetic shift that you can feel over time and that really changes who you are in the world.
That's fascinating. Do you believe that our current race, our humanity, has reemerged following a great catastrophe, or some people believe it was a flood? And I'm asking you that because there's a lot of people we've had on the show that believe that we are a culture that has been rebooted, that the older culture, the older people on the earth were fairly wiped out, except for a small percentage, and that at some point, you know, 5, 10, perhaps 10,000 years ago, there was a deluge, and then there were people who came around and basically provided information, or what you would call a reboot of our civilization.
Well, it does touch on that. These teachings do, but they talk about it in a slightly different way. They talk about this planned evolutionary unfoldment and that it happens in seven stages, again, another seven. And I was researching this and I saw something about it in Blavatsky's book, The Secret Doctrine. And she talks about these seven developmental stages. She calls them root races. And the word race refers to a specific stage, not a racial type. And I thought it was too weird to put in the book at first until I started seeing it in other spiritual texts. It's called the seven streams in the Hindu scriptures and the seven suns or worlds in native cultures. And she talks about these stages. And one of the stages was the development of the emotional body, first the physical, then the emotional. Our current stage is the mental, and then we go beyond to the higher mind. But in the emotional level, that's when that corresponds to Atlantis, when people had access to elemental forces, and they used them against each other. And so that's when, you know, the big wave came and everything was sort of drowned out. And then the new phase began.
Mm. Okay.
That's how they put it.
I mean, I've read Blavatsky and Bailey and other spiritual teachers. And Blavatsky does talk about Atlantis and Lemuria, or she calls it Mu. But I'm always curious, you've written this wonderful book. Do you think that, and you talked a little bit about this in the very beginning, we're ready for this type of intuitive work where we are on a daily basis connecting, or is it just as we need it? Is the goal in your mind that we evolve to a state where it's a natural connection, we wake up as soon as we're conscious that we're awake, that we're connected, or is this something that we use as needed?
Well, I think we evolve to a point where we live with a foot in both worlds. We live in the human world, but we also have access to the subtle worlds where higher level of information can be drawn upon. So we can use that kind of as a pipeline, like these artists and these geniuses do, so they can bring down higher wisdom and higher beauty into the physical world. So we have access, we live in the physical world, but we have access to the subtle world. And that's kind of the next stage of our development and where we're moving to.
Okay. So it's your opinion that we're ready for this, and that it's, there's no, you know, anyone can do it. You just have to apply the foundation, body, mind, and spirit prep, and then you slowly, for lack of a better word, educate the mind and the soul to begin receiving this information. Is that what you are saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't believe that everybody's ready for it. It's a discipline. And it's said that you can be harmed by it if you try to do this over and over and over and over and you're not ready for it. But the truth is, you won't really have the discipline to keep at it unless you're really ready for it. It is a discipline. It has to be done every day.
Wonderful.
It's a particular training. And I can talk a little bit about that. What you're doing basically is you're creating a bridge from the lower mind, the analytical mind, to the soul. And again, the soul is the portal to the even higher world, so information can come straight down to the brain. And you do this by daily meditation. It's called creative meditation, or sometimes Raja Yoga. It's what Patanjali taught all those centuries ago. And what you're doing basically is you're wiring yourself in the same way that we wire our homes for internet or phone connection. We're creating the threads and cables that allow us to be linked to the higher worlds. And we do this by extending our attention upward to the soul day after day. We imagine the soul as a sun about 6 inches above our head. And as we do this every day, we're projecting small threads of energy that thread by thread become a bridge to the higher worlds. And this idea of a bridge is also everywhere. It's called the Rainbow Bridge, or the Bridge of Light in the Wisdom Teachings. It's called the Antakarana in the Hindu text. And I even found it in the Bible. It's called the Straight or Narrow Gate in the Bible. So the idea is that we're making this link. You know, we're creating our internet cables so that we can get information from this higher source and channel it down into our brains.
That's interesting. Okay, here's a for instance. I'm average Joe, average Jane. I wake up in the morning, get ready for work, have my breakfast, get in my car, go. Where am I that I begin using this in a practical way? Do I practice this technique to the point where it's second nature, or do I need to say, hey, higher wisdoms, help me, I need information on this? Is it become so subtle? Can you give an example where it becomes how it's integrated? I'm really curious, and I think our listeners are too, how this telepathy in this new form is integrated?
Well, again, it is a practice, and you do it every day. And as you do that, the relationship between the soul and the human part of us becomes stronger and stronger. So you have access to this. The soul is the highest source of direction and guidance. So you have this source. And the information can just flow down to your brain. You can ask for information. It flows down to your brain. Or at a later stage, it's just a consistent part of you.
But give me a for instance. Say, you know, apply it. Give me a woman who's getting ready for the day. How does her day flow? Can you give us some samples? Give us a case study, but not a, you know, obviously somebody who's actually used it, but somebody who needs to use it.
Well, I can give you some examples of my own life. I started to use this, and it's part of a process. The meditation that I'll introduce is one of the basic ones, and then there's some more advanced ones. I started to study through the Arcane Institute. The Arcane School is an esoteric training, a multi-year esoteric training. It's about 10 years. So they take you very slowly through this. But what I've discovered and what I've experienced is that I have greater access to this sense of guidance, and it's just part of me. Like, for example, the more you do it, the more you know what you should do. I had a really great opportunity just fall in my lap, and I thought that was really interesting because I'm somebody that has used a lot of will to kind of move from stage to stage in my life and in my career especially, and that everything that I've created in my life has come from an act of will. I wanted the magazine, you know, so I really worked at it, and I wanted the grant, so I really worked at it mentally, you know, to try to pull it to me. But this opportunity just came, and it dropped in my lap, and I thought it was so interesting because I didn't do anything to make it happen, and it came at just the right time, at just the right people, and I can't say too much about it because it's a new project that's going to launch next year. But that's the flow that you get into, that you don't really have to struggle, that what you need tends to start to come to you, and you know when it's right. And so when I got this opportunity, I thought, perfect. I was just finishing the book. If it would have come a month earlier, I would have had to say no. But I was just about finished with a book, and so I could start this new thing. So you do. You get into a higher flow.
You mentioned Joan of Arc, and Joan of Arc, some people have chronicled her life. She actually heard voices. Is there different levels of receiving this information as you develop your skills, or is it more, as you would say, just a good flow? And I like that term. You're just flowing. You're in the state of awareness. You're in the state of synchronicities that just work for you, and everything just seems to happen the way you want it. But what would you say about that?
Well, I love the story of Joan of Arc. I read a bunch of books about her, and I've watched all those, you know, cheesy made-for-TV movies, and I've always sobbed at the end. You know, it always created this longing in me, like, I want to have this experience. So again, when you have this ability, you can access non-physical beings, angels, your soul, the souls of other people. I mean, again, that's how these religious scriptures were created, that this information was channeled down into somebody who wrote it down. And so that's what she had. And it said that when we train ourselves, we get to a certain state, and in our next lifetime, we pick up where we left off. So each lifetime is a continuation of what we've had before. And so that's why some people are more ready for this, because they've prepared themselves over lifetimes to do this.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she somehow had this ability to make that contact with these higher worlds. And it's often said, and I found this fascinating, that the higher forces, the higher beings that guide the evolution of our planet, they can't physically affect life on Earth, that they have to work through us. And so they look for those of us who have that connection between the soul, the mind, and the brain, and they can throw down information and so until it reaches our physical consciousness, which is what I think happened to me in the garden, because this intuition work was really an important piece of what's happening now. The intuition work that I did in the 80s and 90s was really the basic stuff. And when I started to read up on spiritual telepathy, I realized that it was the next step. It was a more higher level of spiritual perception. So that's what happens, I think, that we develop in this lifetime or in previous lifetimes the ability to make this connection. And when we have that bridge, then information can flow down to us from all kinds of sources. And we really can be used as servers on Earth and help the evolutionary process. And I think that so many people have a longing to do that.
Would you say that when we're in alignment, it helps everybody else to be in alignment or flow, as you say?
I think it's like a domino effect, that those of us who are making this connection make it easier, that it's just in the ether, you know, sort of this energetic opening that makes it easier for other people to do it too. So we're not just serving ourselves, we're serving the greater good.
Okay, let's get into the experiential portion of our program here and have you take us on a short guided meditation. So what are you going to set up for us?
Okay, first I'm going to give you the basic form of creative or Raja Yoga meditation. And the first thing is that I'm going to just go through it so people will have an understanding of what they're going to do, and then I'll guide them step by step. And this is the basic form that I recommend using for about 6 months before moving on to the more advanced meditations that are in my book. So here we're beginning to build our bridge, but even more importantly, we're training our mind to hold a point of focus. We want the mind to become our servant rather than our master. We want it to be able to focus where we tell it to focus and not where it wants to go, which we know is all over the place. And in this type of meditation, we use what we call a seed thought. And that's a word, sentence, or symbol. And it gives the mind something to hold on to. The thought that we're going to use today is this sentence: let the actions of my soul motivate my daily life. So first, you're going to calm yourself, close your eyes, and follow your breath in and out. Then you're going to use your creative imagination to project a line of light to your soul center, which is about 6 inches above your head. And you'll see it as a brilliant sun. Then you're going to pause for a moment as you experience the light and energy of the soul. And then, holding your mind steady in that light, you're going to meditate for 5 minutes on that sentence, which I'll give you again. So first you're going to examine the words with the analytical mind. And once you've taken that as far as you can, you'll try to go beyond the literal meaning of the word to see the inner meaning. Now we're going to start the meditation. First, you're going to calm yourself by closing your eyes and following your breath in and out for a count of 10. Now you're going to use your creative imagination to project a line of light upwards to the soul center, 6 inches above your head. See it as a brilliant sun, a radiant source of energy. And pause for a moment as you experience the light and energy of your soul. And now, while you're holding the mind steady in the light of the soul, you're going to meditate for 5 minutes on the seed thought. You're going to examine the words first with your analytical mind. And once you've taken that as far as you can, go beyond the literal and look to the inner meaning. Start to meditate now. Now come back. To end your meditation, visualize a pure white light pouring down from your soul, illuminating your mind, calming your emotions, and invigorating your physical body. Sound the Om and open your eyes.
Wonderful. That sounded wonderful. So why don't you give us just a few examples of what people can expect after a full 6 months of this practice?
Well, what you can expect is actually to be able to control the mind. And that's number one in every meditative tradition. You have to be able to get a hold of the mind so it won't gallop forward and gallop this way and that way. You're going to be able to focus it. And that's really important as you go into the more advanced teachings, because what you're going to do is you're going to hold that point of focus at the soul level. And once you can do that, then the information can start to stream down and reach the brain. But the mind can't waver. The mind has to be completely still. And you're going to learn how to do that. And it's a slow process that happens over time, but it does happen.
Wow. Fantastic. Colleen, it's been wonderful having you on the program. You have launched the special edition of Earth Ancients. And those of you listening, I hope you're able to follow with Colleen. Now, how can people get a hold of your material? I mean, other than this book, Spiritual Telepathy, do you have a website with other tapes? You mentioned that there are two other meditations. Do you have guided meditations that support the book?
Well, I have a website, and people can go to the website and read the introduction to the book. I don't have any tapes yet, but those are going to be coming out next year.
Wonderful. Colleen, it's been great having you on the program, and I just really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it, too.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. That is our first program in the Ancient Wisdom series, Spiritual Telepathy. I really thought that was quite unique. Her book is available, Spiritual Telepathy, on Amazon. You can either get the digital ebook version or the hardback version sent right to you. So that was fun. I really enjoyed that. Okay, look forward to the next program. It's going to be on sacred retreats, understanding why it's important to get away and from the day-to-day grind that we all go through. Sacred retreats just came out, and understanding why we got to connect with nature and why it's really, really important it's really important that we get away. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up. All right. I hope you have a great day, and we will catch you later.